Live.
Hi, this is Studio B Live. I'm your host, David Burns. Studio B Live is brought to you by Long Lane Honeybee Farms, a family-owned business of my wife, Sherry, and myself, and all of our family that helps us so much. Manufacture all the beekeeping equipment, harvest the honey, take care of the hives, raise queens, and everything else to do with beekeeping. We love it. We enjoy it. We enjoy it so much that we decided to spend a half hour to an hour a day on this broadcast, just talking about honeybees, talking about what's new in beekeeping, so that we can encourage more people to take up beekeeping. And I don't know, maybe you've got nothing to do for the next hour, and so why not just download the MP3 file? Why not just log into your computer here and just listen to what we have to share about beekeeping? Sit back and enjoy the program, and thank you again for tuning in. Please tell your friends about this broadcast. Well, yesterday, Sherry and I began talking to you about how to market your honey, how to sell that honey, how to make it look good, how to find some places where you can put your honey, and how you make a good presentation of so that you can really sell that honey well. And we want to continue that today, and hope you enjoy it. Take some notes, learn something, get ready for a great spring and summer. And I hope that all that honey does come into your hives so that you will have to find a way to sell it all.
You know, on our shelves, for instance, I'm looking at them, we've got 1 pound, we have 2 pounds, 3 pounds, and it skips to 5 pounds. And the biggest that we sell on our shelves is 5 pounds.
Oh, I thought the honey bear would have been our biggest seller.
No. I mean, that's as high up as we go.
Oh, the largest.
The largest size is 5 pounds. And then if somebody comes in and says, well, I want, you know, a gallon, which is, you know, we say 10 pounds, actually.
Yeah.
Then we sell it. We sell the 5 pounds in, you know, however many quantities they want to make it, 1 gallon or 2 gallons or whatever. You can sell it in the gallons, but we don't. We only
I know. We did a cup till a couple of years ago. We would always sell those 5 gallon buckets. Remember that, to a lot of co-op people? And I hated that, because, you know, you have to give a little bit of a discount. Actually a lot, don't you, when you sell 5 gallons.
Yeah,
we did the math, and it doesn't make sense. We don't have any trouble getting rid of our honey, so why sell a 5 gallon of it when you can go ahead and bottle it in smaller containers? And that's what people need to know. And should we tell them our trade secret, Sherry, about the teddy bear, or are you going to keep that a secret?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you put, you know, we sell our honey for $4 a pound, but we sell the teddy bear for $4, the little teddy bear, but the teddy bear only has 12 ounces. So actually, that's the most profitable way to make money, is by selling it, or make money off selling honey, is to sell it in the smallest quantity.
Well, it is. That will be the way that you make the most money, is by selling it in the smallest quantity. And we have a lot of people who buy it in those
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's labeled 12 ounces. And
right,
they don't realize that they could buy the next level up and make more get more honey for the money, but it's not that big of a deal. But it is a big seller for us.
Well, there's just a lot of people who don't use a lot of honey,
right?
And so they don't like to buy it larger. The larger you go up, the more money you save. Certainly,
mm-hmm.
Especially if you're going to buy a gallon, you can with us you can save a lot of money by buying it by the gallon.
Mm-hmm.
But they only want a small quantity, and so that is the biggest seller, is the smallest quantity that you have. So where do you sell it?
Yeah, where do you sell it to? And, you know, it makes me think, too. Saturday we had a lady that came up, and she really wanted honey. She acted like she and her husband really liked honey, and she wanted to buy a teddy bear. And then, you know, he said, well, I'll buy this next big one up, which is 2 pounds. And then she said, well, I don't want one that big, because I'm not sure how fast I'll use it. And she was kind of worried that if she didn't use it real fast, that it would spoil or something, I guess.
She wanted the freshest ones, and what we had been just been bottled within the past, you know, month.
Yeah, but honey never gets old. I mean, it never spoils. It's the only food that never spoils. Honey, I think honey is as fresh today as it will be in 5 years, although it may crystallize.
Right, and I don't think that she also understands, and sometimes you just don't have time to go into it with people, but I don't think she understands that, you know, in a month or two when she wants to buy it, it's going to be the same honey because, you no longer harvest honey after, you know, August or September. Mm-hmm. So if she needs honey in January, that's still going to be last August honey, and I'm not sure that people understand that, but sometimes you just don't have time to get into that with folks, but...
Yeah, okay, so now you want to talk about, now we want to share with you about selling honey. How do you sell it?
Well, of course, one place is in your home.
We argue this with our beekeeper friends and so forth in our associations, but I understood the public health department to say you cannot sell honey out of your home. And I clearly heard her say that if somebody walks up to your back door and says, can I buy honey, and you turn around and go into your kitchen. Now, this is pertaining to Illinois. It could be different. But you can't sell honey out of your house. But then when I talked to people afterward, they were like, no, she didn't say that. That's not what she said. But that's what I understood she to say. But most people sell it out of their home, don't they? I mean, most beekeepers, they've got it on the... They get it near the back door or on the porch or something, and people go and sell it out of their homes.
Right. Most people that I know sell it out of their homes. Now, I know from doing some research on the Internet that when you're making cosmetics, soap, lotions, those kinds of things, which, we do using beeswax, you cannot make those things in your kitchen. Most girls do, but you are not supposed to. So
I think it's true.
I think it's the very same
for
Illinois. I think it's the same
ruling. Yeah, you're right. Beekeepers are not supposed to process their honey in their home. Maybe that's why I misunderstood. Which I don't know. That to me that really is aggravating to some extent because what happened is beekeepers had this nice kitchen, that was just stainless steel, everything. And then the public health said, no, you can't do it in your home. And where'd they go? They went out to the garage. I'm serious. They went out to the dirty garage, the dirty shed, or their basement or somewhere with a back entryway. And they started doing it there. But I guess they figured that in your home, maybe you make other things that could contaminate the honey, like a chicken. If you made chicken and you've got stuff on your counter, they want just a designated honey room.
Well, the listeners just need to really check into that because every state is different and everybody has different.
Yeah.
There's some states that are really tough on this kind of stuff, and there are some states that are not, they look the other way and they don't really pay any attention to them. It's the same thing as, selling tomatoes or, picking tomatoes out of your yard and selling them out of your, house.
Mm-hmm.
But we always have a sign at the end of our long lane, when the honey... when our honey harvest comes in and it says honey for sale and we put it out there. So that certainly is one, one way to do it. You might want to go down, if you live in the country, go down another road and put a honey sign out. Ask the farmer, of course, before you stick it out there in a field and point the way to your house. And that might be one of the best ways. Put a couple flyers on the bulletin boards in the, at the library, the post office, your grocery store.
Yeah, the pizza place, the grocery store, post office.
Yeah, put some flyers out there so people know where you are and just stand back and wait. Now, I don't think you're going to get a flood of people knocking on your door all the time, but, we will have a steady stream of people drive up to the house all summer. And usually in the wintertime, they call first because I don't think they want to come all the way out here and find out we don't have any. And last year we sold out very, very quickly, and we didn't have any in the wintertime for Christmas. But this year we had a lot more hives, so I think we're going to have a lot more available for people at Christmas time. But that's one way to do it.
And I wanted to say, too, it does take a few years to get established. And I think that's why a lot of people struggle. They just start selling honey, and then, after 1 or 2 years, they can't really sell what they thought, and so they kind of get frustrated. They don't try it anymore. You really do. Each year that we sell honey, we have the same customers that we gained last year, and then we gain new customers. And so it's like any other kind of business. You build a customer base the word gets around and it spreads really fast if you have raw honey. And you just have to be patient and build that clientele.
Now, here at our house, we actually built a store on our property so that when people come up, they go into the store, so they're not coming into our home. And, some folks are not going to be able to do that, but some folks might, that might be an ideal of something that they can do. But here at our house, you can come into the store, and we have honey, we have beekeeping supplies, and you can buy books on beekeeping, recipe books, you can buy t-shirts, you can get, Christmas gift ideas and that sort of thing. So you can do it up as big as you want, or you can do it as small as you want.
Yeah, and really, you said we built the honey store, but actually the bees built it. People, need to realize that if you work your bees correctly, you can generate enough money over time and save that and actually, use that to reinvest it and improve your bee operation. So the bees really built this this bee lab and this store for us from the money that we made off our bees.
Okay, another ideal is you can go to some summer fairs or little fall town festivals that they have up. We've been to a honeybee festival. We've been to a sesquicentennial.
Lion Club, cookouts, fish fries.
and people say, well, how do you find out about that? Well, there's a couple ways that you do it. One of them is probably one of the biggest things is you need to watch your newspaper. Now, we live in an area where we can get several small town newspapers. And they will publish it, a week, two, a month or two before they're going to have their little town festival. And they'll say, the Chrisman Town Festival is coming up and we're looking for vendors, call this number. And that is one way that you find out where you can go and vend at some of these little summer fairs and town festivals. Another way is once you have a booth up, every single one we've ever been at, there has been somebody that has come up to us and has said, we like your booth. Will you please come and vend at our town festival or our road rally or whatever it is that they're doing? And they'll give us a business card, and then they'll usually contact us. They'll usually send us a letter in the mail saying, here's the vending contract, sign the vending contract. And usually a vending contract, a table at a festival or a little small town fair for us in this area usually costs between $10 and $15. I think it's more if you want electricity. And so you send the check in with the contract and they've got you down. And then, of course, that day you show up. Right now I'm just talking about outdoor things. And we always take a couple of tables with us. We have one of those pop-up tents that go over your head, and we have to make a presentation. I don't know if we'll be able to have time to get into how to merchandise and present your stuff, but that is one option as a summer fair or your small town festivals. And I think the outdoor small town places is probably one of the biggest ways that we sell our honey.
I love it too, because I love to talk about bees. And usually I never have taken a observation hive, have I?
I don't think so.
No. Well, I tried to one time, but I couldn't get it together in time. But I always take an empty beehive and a smoker and a hat and a veil, because those are real attention getters, and a hive tool, kids come by. And I love just sitting. I love that so much, sitting outdoors talking all day long. People come up and you talk to them. I'm a talker. They ask about, aren't the bees dying?
Oh,
you know,
always, always. I heard the bees were disappearing.
Yeah. And or a lot of people come up and say, is this from my area? Because I heard that honey from my local area is good for my allergies. And I'm like, yeah, you're right about that. It is from your area. So we do really, we have a lot of fun. We pass out business cards. We make flyers up. And a big draw too. We add some extra stuff. We add the honey straws, honey sticks. We don't make those. It's very easy to purchase a bundle of those on the internet from companies that make them, and then you can make your profit by selling it, a little bit more. Kids love it. They cost a quarter, And, you know, they keep pulling mom and dad over there because they want more honey sticks, you know, and then they finally come and buy some honey. Sherry sometimes will make soap or candles, and we have that at our displays outdoors, and that's a big draw. That draws a lot of people. These can be really fun, and what our listeners need to understand, they can be very profitable days. It's not uncommon for us in the course of one day to make $300 to $500 on honey sales at a small town event.
Our first two that we ever did, I don't know if you remember this, but we actually sold out on Saturday, and so we had to, you know, the fair continued on Sunday, but we had to take our stuff down and go home because we, you know, completely sold out of honey at those. So, yeah, and you almost want to always take two people with you when you go to something like that because you do have people who want to talk. They, you know, it's something that they just want to discuss. And it's very hard to talk to one person and continue to sell, you know, at those places. But, you know, and I don't know if we want to get into it right now because I think we were just talking about selling. But I don't know. Have you ever gone up to those tables sometimes at some of those fairs and those people are just sitting there and they're just grumps and they're just sitting in a chair back there and you just feel like, ooh, I don't even want to stop here, you know. But we always make sure that we wear our T-shirts with our logos on it and we don't sit that often unless traffic is just extremely slow, which it was Saturday, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But usually we stand up when we talk to people and we're happy and we greet people. And I refuse to be one of those grumps that sit in the chair and just dare you to come buy some honey.
And sometimes, you know, the kind of people that Sherry are talking about, I think they're so they've done this for so long and maybe they're not enjoying it anymore. I've seen them sit back there behind their table and like read a novel and just sit back there, you know, and maybe their philosophy is I don't want to intimidate people. I want them to browse carefully through the store. But I believe a good sales technique is as soon as somebody kind of gets near your table, you want to say, hello, how are you today? Connect them to you as a person, and then they'll look at your product.
Right. Another place is the little, especially this time of year, the little holiday bazaars.
I'm not really for that.
David's not, although I have been to a couple that have seemed like they've been well attended. I don't know. We went to one Saturday, though, and there was quite a few vendors. It was a school asked us to come over, and they were having a holiday bazaar, and we made a total of $40.
Which I spent like $15 on lunch, $10 on gas.
And then we got that caricature guy to draw our pictures. So.
And that was like $15. So we
had to pay for, you know, our daughter babysat. So we paid her to do child care. So I think we went in the hole about $50.
And, you know, sometimes I'm willing to do that if I think I can pass out business cards and people will get to know us. And we did some of that. But they just did not. The biggest reason that we didn't do well, they didn't have anybody show up to drop into all those vendors. How many vendors? 25 vendors, and yet there were probably not even 25 people there, different people throughout the course of the day. It was a flop.
Yeah. One thing that I think if people call and they want to do these small indoor, and this could be for the outdoors too, unless it's a well-established fair that has been going on forever and ever and ever, if you're doing something that's small or it's brand new, you need to ask some questions to see if it's going to be worth your while to even go. And there might be some people say, well, you know, I don't have to make any money to make it worth my while. But even though Dave and I have fun with a lot of this stuff, you know, the bottom line is we really are wanting to make money. And so I would ask the people, you know, tell me about your advertising. How much advertising have you done? Where have you done your advertising? What kind of a crowd do you expect to show up? How many times have you done this? And so you'll have kind of an idea if it might be worth your while to go. If they say, oh, my goodness, you know, we've done this for 10 years now, we have 1,000 people show up at this, then sign up. But if they're like, well, you know, we're going to send flyers out with the kindergarten class, it probably is not going to be, you know, in your best interest to do that.
Yeah, you know, and when we're outdoors, and especially like some of the outdoor activities, people are in the they're in a festive mood, and they kind of expect certain things at some of these fall festivals especially. They expect pumpkins. They expect apple cider. Mm-hmm. And you expect to see honey at fall festivals. You know, and sometimes we have – it's interesting, the people who come to our booth, there are those that are kind of like, oh, you know, I heard our bees are in trouble. I kind of like a teaspoon of honey in my – coffee or my tea, and they'll buy a little teddy bear, you know. But then there are these guys that show up that kind of burst in there, I want a gallon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, honey's real, I know it's good for you. Well, how much is it? And you tell them, and they're like, I know all about honey. I need to get my honey. And they just walk off with a gallon, you know.
Well, you can see some of them, you know, they're dragged by their wives to these to these little craft bazaars, and you can tell they're not really wanting to be there. And as soon as they see, you know, David at a honey booth, they make a beeline for him, and they buy the biggest thing, and then they're just so proud of that thing, and they lug it around the rest of the day with them.
Because a lot of times there's not a lot of things guys can buy. I mean, there's a little, you know, what am I trying to say? These little craft items that women really like, but a lot of guys don't buy those sorts of things. There's things for the kids, so guys kind of relate to, you know, there's a man there, he's a beekeeper, he sells honey, I think I'll buy a jar, I do like honey.
Okay. Another ideal is a roadside stand, and what I'm talking about specifically there is you setting up your own stand. I guess you could go in with a couple of neighbors who had corn to sell and tomatoes to sell and that sort of stuff.
Find some kids, set up a lemonade stand, and push them over. I want to take over your lemonade stand, or you could, you know, something like that. It gives you the image of a lemonade stand with little kids, but that's what you're looking for in it, just a little roadside stand.
Right, yeah, and you might have some kids that, you know, really enjoy doing that, or even some teenagers that enjoy doing that. But I actually had heard, I think my mom was telling me the story about a man who would put up his little roadside stand right on his property, you know, so you're just right off the street, but it's on your property. And he would just leave a little container there and say, take what you want and pay the money and put it in the container. At the end of the day, he'd come up and he'd get his container. And I guess it, you know, people really were honest about it. They were paying the right amount and no one ever stole it. And, you know, I don't know if I want to do that, but, you know, certainly some people do it. There's some articles out there, some about how to make a portable roadside stand, you put them in the back of your truck and just kind of flip out these different little, you know, sections, and there you go. So, I mean, you know, you could do it at the end of your road, or you could, you know, if you knew somebody that had, you know, property somewhere, you could just kind of pull off the road. You knew it was a good place, you know, for cars to go by, and, you know, get permission. Don't just pull into somebody's, you know, parking lot and sit there. You know, you need to ask, but most generally, you go just about anywhere in the summer and you see somebody set up with a load of sweet corn or a bushel of peaches, you know, and they're just sitting in somebody's parking lot. So you can certainly do something like that too.
Yeah, and if you knew that there's a lady that always comes to town and in a certain time of the year she always sells peaches and everybody shows up in mass numbers and buy peaches from her, well, that's where I would want to, you know, you're not going to threaten her sales, and she'll probably invite you to be there. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, you know, we boost the sale of a local hardware store with our honey.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, I just made up a little silly little stand, a little out of cardboard, and painted it yellow, and put a nice little print up of Long Lane Honeybee Farms and a picture, and it holds, you know, maybe 10 or 20 of our honey jars. And I did not even have to ask the hardware store. It's where we buy all of our lumber to make our beehives. They invited me to do that. So they put it up on the counter. He put a big sign out front, honey for sale. And he says that is just one of their biggest selling items there, and we cannot keep them stocked. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they've done, but... And in fact, I was getting my driver's license one day, and a lady said, hey, are you the guy that has the honey I buy at the hardware store? And I'm like, yeah, you know. So she's getting it because she said the honey helps with her sinus condition or arthritis. And some of these places they're just wanting you. They really would invite you to come and sell your honey at these little places that people hang out, like hardware stores in small towns.
Yeah, it would. Most of them would have to be small town, you know, hardware stores or paint stores or, you know, any of those kind of little stores. We also sell, I think she's actually completely sold out of it, but a small artsy craftsy kind of place downtown in a community nearby. She was selling it there too. So, you know, if you're going to go into Walmart or, you know, the IGA, that's something different. That's when you start talking about commercial contracts.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can walk into your local, your not your Lowe's or your Home Depot, but your local little hardware store, you know, and the boss is behind the counter and ask him, you know, can you put it there? And generally, unless, you know, he's having a bad day, you know, they're more than glad to let you set up a little display.
Yeah, and we have people that invite us to do that, and we just don't even take them up on it. And is it because we just don't need to? You know, we're at the winery one time. They wanted us to sell honey at the winery, and we just, at the time, I don't think we had any. It was late in the fall, but, you know, I guess there's a point where if you're selling it through your means that are, you know, that you've become comfortable with, that are affordable, they're not out of your reach. You know, you don't want to drive 3 hours to take in a vendor place somewhere that's going to, you know, be risky. But, you know, if you find a way to sell your honey in local places, then you may not have to keep going to new places. You'll find that you quickly sell out, and you'll be wanting to get more hives running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you try the health food store. Yeah, some places like that.
Mm-hmm.
Another place, of course, in the summertime are farmer markets. And some bigger places, I don't know if, you know, very many small town has these, but some bigger towns and cities all across, you know, the nation have got farmer markets, and they're easy enough to find how to contact those people. They'll always have something in your newspaper when they're getting ready to start the farmers markets. So you need to just keep your eye on the newspaper and, you know, call the number and find out what it costs to get yourself a booth at the farmers market. You know, they're like every Wednesday morning and every Saturday morning or something like that. It's kind of a commitment, you know, if you want to do something like that, to do that through the entire summer. But there's some people that really, really enjoy that, and there's some people that really enjoy selling honey.
You know, and one of the things about farmers market and selling honey is usually the owner or one of his representatives, his or her representatives, will have to meet with you. Usually it depends. I mean, it's going to depend on the farmer market person, but normally the farmer market owner will want to speak with you. He or she may want to come and see how you process your honey. They may want to look at what you're doing. They want to make sure that you are, you know, doing it correctly. And so sometimes they'll just talk to you over the phone if you're established and they know you have, you know, a good process of bottling your honey. But, you know, don't feel intimidated if you do approach a farmer's market and the owner says, well, I need to come to your house and see how clean you are and how you're bottling your honey. He or she is just wanting to make sure you've got a good product.
And, you know, anytime people say that, I need to come to your house, whether it's a, you know, public health department or, you know, a town official or a farmer market representative, you know, you should welcome those kinds of visits because it's not going to do anything but help you do better in your processing your product and selling your product. But on the other hand, if you're doing it correctly, there'll be nothing for you to hide or there'll be no reason to feel, you know, intimidated by them. You don't need to. There's a lot of people who try to stay off the radar when it comes to honey and those kinds of things. And I guess I've never really understood that. You know, they don't want the, you know, the bee inspector to come out. But I always thought, hey, you know, if he's going to come out, he's going to do nothing but help us raise these bees better and give us more ideals and help us keep them disease-free and those kinds of things. So I'd welcome those people mm-hmm. to come out. You know, another thing that Dave and I have never done are flea markets. But we know somebody in the area. His name is John, and John does really good selling his honey at a flea market.
Well, we assume that he does because he keeps doing it over and over again. And most people who do bad don't keep doing it year after year, do they?
I wouldn't think so. And I really don't know much about flea markets because I've never been a flea market kind of person. Garage sales and flea markets overwhelm me.
Yeah, you know, I think I've been to some, and they have tables and tables of little trinkets, and don't they? Is this what I'm thinking of?
Yeah,
all these
yeah.
little, like, sewing thimbles and
yeah.
and salt and pepper shakers and
yeah.
model train. I mean, all these little things, and it's just overwhelming to go through and look at all that. And some of them are identical. You just keep walking mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. tables and tables and tables. But, yeah, I think John does super. He has probably a good established business there and return clientele at this flea market. He's known. Everybody knows he's there. My goodness, if anything, if he should ever stop, you know, producing honey, it would leave a huge dent in the flea market. Yeah.
A flea market is eBay offline.
Yeah, it kind of is. Well, I don't know if you auction though. Do you?
No, they don't. They don't auction, but it's just
yeah.
stores after store. Well, I call them stores, but booths
yeah.
after booths after booths of, you know, some very intriguing items, some very old items, some very, you know, some antiques.
New stuff too.
But yeah. to me, it's just overwhelming. I guess unless you're looking for something. But he actually sets up there at a flea market and does it every, you know, I don't know. This particular flea market that I'm thinking of has regular hours, and they're open a regular season. And so I want to say it's like every single Saturday and Sunday for, you know, I don't know, 12 weeks or something like that. Again, it's a huge commitment, you know, if you want to do something like that. But it apparently works for some people. So, and this next one might really surprise you, garage sales. I had a friend that said she went to a garage sale looking for something, and there was somebody selling honey, and they were really surprised and bought it, and, you know, I guess it went very quickly. So, gosh, you know, next time you get ready to have a garage sale, think about setting up a little table there, or if you have a friend there and you want to sell some with them, there you go.
And, you know, I think you need to think about the different types of honey that you can sell, too. I mean, obviously you can sell liquid honey, you know, that we all are real familiar with. And then you can also sell comb honey. And then you can sell a combination of comb honey and liquid. And we've sold a lot of that. I mean, it's not a real hot seller, but sometimes we'll take a big chunk of honey. You've seen it in the old days when I was a kid. They had it all the time. I always talked my mom into letting me buy that honey with a comb in it. And I would actually go in there with my fork and pull the comb out and chew it, you know, and just suck all the honey out of that comb. And they say that's the best honey is what's actually in the comb. But we have sold a lot of that, and it looks really cool. Or you can do what we've been talking about here lately is the spreadable honey, the whipped honey. You can actually make that. So you can go into these places with not just your typical jar of honey, but you can have your honey, you can have your comb honey, you can have honeycomb in a liquid jar, and then you can also have your spreadable honey too.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you send in your ideas of where you sell your honey? I think that'd be interesting to see if people sell honey in some place other than the places that I've mentioned. So you can send those in to david@honeybeesonline.com. So send us where you sell your honey, and we'll read all those different ideas if we have any more than what we mentioned here. And then one last thing would be commercial contracts where you would sell your honey. So I think that's going to have to be at a different time because that's kind of an entirely different subject. So we'll talk about commercial contracts maybe in a later broadcast.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thanks, Sherry. And if you have other comments or questions that you do want to get a hold of us about selling honey, you can always ask us more questions. We love to get your questions, and we love to answer them on our broadcast. Just email me at david@honeybeesonline.com. And now it's time for equipment, beekeeping equipment. Hey. Well, it's time for the equipment section of our program today. And in previous programs, I talked about the top cover the telescoping top cover. It is the main top piece on the hive that actually slips over your top box, hangs over a little bit, and usually has metal over there to keep the weather out of the hive. And just underneath your top cover, you have your inner cover. That inner cover is usually made of a thin piece of material with a rail around it. The rail always points up when you are putting it on the hive, and it goes just under your top cover. It's the piece with the oval-shaped hole in the top, and it's useful for a temperature barrier, kind of a barrier between the top of the box and where the bees are. And that brings us to our next section that we want to talk about of the beehive, and that is what we're going to call the super, because the super is the piece that usually is just underneath your inner cover. We're starting from the top and working our way down, and we're assuming in this configuration it's summertime and you have your honey supers on your box. Now, your super is a box. Oh, and by the way, let me tell you what these words are. You need to get really good at these words. If you're new to beekeeping or you're thinking about becoming a beekeeper, you know how it is when you talk computers. You have to talk megabytes, kilobytes, hard drives. You know, and so when you come to beekeepers, you have to talk their language, all right? And we don't always agree, but we know how to translate. And so sometimes a beekeeper will say to me, they may refer to their honey super as the honey box. They may call it a medium super. They may call it an Illinois super. You know, they have different names for it. A medium super is the super that is very common among beekeepers. It measures from the top to its bottom. The thickness of that super is 6 5/8 inches, and that's it was actually kind of created out of necessity here in Illinois by Dadant Company in Hamilton, Illinois, and that's why it's called the Illinois super. It's a combination. It's kind of a middle ground. There's the shallow super. That's smaller by an inch, a little over an inch, than the medium super. And then there's the large super, what we often call the deep hive body. Well, it's just like a super. It's just like the medium super, only it's 9 5/8 inches from top to bottom, the size of the box. The width and the length of the box is the same. We're only talking about the height difference here. And it makes them heavier. Now, if you wanted to, you could make all your boxes one size, either medium, or you could make them the deep hive bodies. I don't want to confuse you too much or overwhelm you, but to understand today, we're talking about the medium super box. We call it a super because that's where the honey is brought in to this super box. So, typically, a beehive in the summertime is going to have your bottom board, your two deep hive bodies that are 9 5/8, and on top of them, you're going to have your honey super. This is where the bees put the honey for you, because bees just love to work, 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 work. And as they work, and as they carry nectar in and out, they work so efficiently, they bring in more honey than they need. I should say nectar. They don't bring honey in. Well, rarely do they bring honey in. They bring nectar in. They put it in cells, and then they cure it until the nectar reaches about 17 or 18% humidity, or, let's see, how do I say that? 17% moisture, and then they will seal it off when it gets dry or cured. Because if too much moisture is in the honey, it can begin to ferment. So they dry out the moisture, and that's why nectar becomes honey, because the bees actually dry it out so that it has very little water and it becomes very thick. So you have your Illinois super. It is made of, traditionally it's made of 1-inch pine. It measures 3/4 inch. You know how wood is today. But it's a 3/4 inch board, and this is made of pine. There are sometimes that beekeepers make it out of other materials, but pine is going to be your best bet. And it is grooved at the top on the front and back to hold your frames. It holds 10 frames, and that's what you call it. A lot of new people call call these frames everything you can imagine. Some people have called them drawers, and that's what they call the boxes. And they call these frames, they call them sheets and hangy-down thingies and all, all these funny things. But the frame, there's 10 of them in this Honey Super, and there's 10 in every box below them. Now, I say there's 10. That's traditionally what the box is built to hold. However, you can only put 8 or 9 in these Honey Supers if you want to. And it is commonly accepted that if you pull one of these 10 frames out of your Honey Super and then take your remaining 9 frames and spread them out a little bit, that your bees will draw the wax foundation out wider, and actually each of the now 9 frames can hold more honey. And some people claim you can produce more honey with 9 frames in a hive than you can 10, because they pull the wax out deeper and put more honey in each of the 9 frames. And sometimes we do that, and it's fun. They're heavier for sure, and I think that is right. I think it can produce more honey that way. And but that's your Honey Super. It's a beautiful box, the Illinois Super, very popular box among beekeepers. And again, the height is the height of it is 6 5/8 inches. And now, can you have a hive that's made up only of this size box? Absolutely. We sell many hives to customers who want their entire hive to be made up of this size box, because they don't like picking up the heavy 9 5/8 inch boxes. And once you get one of those boxes full of bees and full of honey, well, full of honey, it can be well over 100 pounds, 120 pounds sometimes. A deep hive body box, 10 frames full of honey, can break your back. It's terrible. I've done it. It's grueling. And so many beekeepers, especially those who do have a little back, you know, problems or don't have the strength that they once had, they do prefer to muscle the smaller, medium super, and they use those for their deep hive bodies as well. Oh, and by the way, for those of you that are new to beekeeping, when we're talking about the super, the medium Illinois super, again, it can be called an Illinois super, a medium super, but it only holds the honey unless you do want to use it in place of where the bees live. And that's why we call the two boxes below the supers, we call those deep hive bodies, because that is where the body of the hive lives, the cluster, the nest, that's where they hang out. You never want to take honey out of where the brood nest lives. That's the two deep hive bodies below where you're putting your supers. You understand what I'm saying? You got to let your bees live in the hive. You got to let them raise their young. You got to let them lay eggs. You got to let the queen build up her brood nest. And so that's off limits to you, Mr. or Mrs. Beekeeper. The brood nest where they're storing honey for their own hive, they need that food to feed their young and sustain their own hive. So that's why we put the Honey Super on top of that, because they bring in more nectar, they make more honey than they need, generally speaking. That's the whole idea of being a beekeeper. How many supers can you put on? You know, as many as your bees are going to fill up, keep putting them on. I've seen pictures of 10 or 12, 15, and I forget what the record is, but it's way up there, I think, in the teens, the amount of honey supers you can put on a single hive and let them keep filling it over and over again. Here's what I do. With my hives, I usually put on 3 honey supers. Every good honey-producing hive has 3 honey supers. They have one right on top of the nest where they are, above the deep hive bodies. And I usually put that on first. And when I see them starting to fill that up decently, I'll put my second super right on top of that one. That's called top supering. There's a phrase called bottom supering, and that's when you would lift up a super that's already starting to be filled, and you would put an empty one below it. I like the top super because I don't know why, it's easier. I've got a lot of hives, and it's just plop another one on, let them go for it. And so I usually keep adding, you know, when I see them filling up the second super, then I add a third one on top of that, and that way I can always cycle these three in and out. For example, when I see that my one closest to my D-pipe body, the one on the bottom of my three, if I see that it's full and it's sealed off, then I pull it off. And so the stack drops down. Now there's two. I run back. You know, I do a whole bunch of hives at once, but I run back to the honey room with all these supers, and we have high-speed equipment, so I run them through there really fast, and within an hour or two, I run back out to my yards, and now I've got this empty super. The comb is drawn out, but I've extracted all the wax, all the honey, but it's nice wax already pulled out, and it's still got some wet, smelly, good honey on it. So when I go back to the hive, guess where I put this one? I put it right on top. And my thinking is, if I put this empty frame of drawn comb with kind of some wet honey on it from where I extracted the honey, if I put it on top, it attracts the bees, the workers, the foragers. It attracts them to go up and store honey up into that because they're drawn to that smell. They start working it. And so I just keep this process of cycling those supers throughout my hives by running three. Now, if I weren't going to do that, if I weren't going to keep an eye on it, you could just put three on there and walk away. Some beekeepers do that. They put three honey supers on a hive, or one or two, and they leave it because they don't want to work their hives. They're busy maybe. They'll come back in the fall, and they'll just see what they have and take it out. But I have found that if you work your bees like this, cycling those supers on and off the hive, emptying them out, putting them back on, woo-wee, you can get into a situation sometimes when the weather's right and the nectar's strong. Ooh, they can fill up an entire honey super, a medium super, in just 3 to 4, 5 days. They can refill it, seal it off, and you take it off again. That happened to me once when I lived in Ohio. I was a new beekeeper back in the early 90s, and boy, I tell you what, my first experience with beekeeping was I could not keep supers on that hive. I think I had two hives, but I couldn't keep enough honey supers on that hive. They would fill it up in 4 or 5 days. I'd have to take it off, extract it, put it back on. I had honey coming out of my ears, and some beekeepers will tell you about, oh yeah, I remember in 1980-something when, boy, I made honey supers, my bees fill them up in 2 or 3 days. Some beekeepers tell me, and I don't have a way to weigh my hives with a hive scale, but you can buy a hive scale and put it under your hive or put your hive on it, and every day you can weigh it at the same time. You know, when your bees come back in at night, for example, and they're telling me that on a good day, it's pretty common for your bees to bring in 20 pounds of nectar. Wow! I mean, that's fascinating that they bring that much in. So that's our lesson today from the equipment section of our broadcast on the honey super. I don't know if you have any more questions. Probably you have, and if you do, I encourage you to write in or call. Call us at 217-427-2430. That's 217-427-2430. And say, hey, I was wondering about the honey super. You might want to be asking questions that I didn't cover today about the honey super. But there you go. Lessons in beekeeping equipment. Today we're working our way down. We did the top cover, the inner cover, in previous broadcast. Today we've done the Illinois, the medium super. And tomorrow we're going to do the deep hive body. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about bee space tomorrow, too. All right. And now it's time for Back in History. Well, one of the all-time famous beekeepers was A.I. Root, and we talked about him yesterday. And this goes back to our history lesson in beekeeping. Lives of Famous Beekeepers. I'm reading from an article written in the American Bee Journal, the August 1937 edition, that speaks about A.I. Root, who had his bee business in Medina, Ohio. It's the Root Company is still in operation even to this day. They no longer produce beekeeping equipment, but they do make candles, and a very popular candle among churches are actually manufactured at the Root Company in Ohio. But we look back now in time to A.I. Root, a fascinating individual. I want to pick up reading this article that's written by Kent Pellett. And again, this is a great copy of the American Bee Journal that a friend found, I think, like at a yard sale or something. It's just in perfect condition, all the way back to August 1937. And what I like about this article, I'll just pick up reading it where I left off yesterday. It says, perhaps the greatest service performed by Editor Root those early years in gleanings was the humbug and swindle department. People of today can scarcely imagine the extent to which the byways of trade were beset with crooks and people of no responsibility. So prevalent was dishonesty that men of good standing in their communities had to back up their statements and advertisements with affidavits and certificates from bankers and others. And since beekeepers had to order most of their supplies and queen bees through the mail, they often were swindled. Root asked his readers to report to him people who were carrying on fraudulent business, and he published accounts of their operation in Gleanings. The article goes on to say that N.C. Mitchell, editor of the Illustrated Bee Journal, advertised beekeeping supplies and claimed he had 1,000 colonies of bees and 5,000 Italian queens in the South, which were for sale. But Root never could find out that he had made good on any order to his customers. Although Mitchell was a rival editor, Root did not hesitate to give publicity to his activities. Over a period of 25 years, the name of Miss Lizzie Cotton was found in the humbug and swindle column more often than any other. Mrs. Cotton advertised her cotton controllable hive and the cotton improved bees, which would bring to their happy owners as much honey in one hive as in six by any other hive or system. Her ads appeared in the religious papers, yet people who ordered from her rarely received a reply. Only occasionally did she ship to customers who made a loud racket, and then only a common rough box and black bees. For years, Root published letters from people who had been defrauded by her. Between the apiary, the supply business, and Gleanings, which soon grew to several thousand subscribers, the business showed a rapid gain. But in those years, the troubles of financing the business were acute. New ventures and expansions put Root continually into debt. And in spite of all the economies he could effect, the outgo often exceeded the income. He was forced one season to walk 5 miles to his Sunday school each Sunday in order to save 75 cents for livery hire. But the spring of 1878 found him with $3,000 in the bank, which gave him a new and cheerful feeling. All his life up to that time, he had been heavily in debt. Root drove himself from 6 o'clock in the morning to 9 in the evening to keep up with the work. When the correspondence grew greater than he could handle, he made notes on the margins of the letters and turned them over to his clerks to answer while he went through the factory to see that all was going well. He frequently kept 3 clerks busy answering by postcards the questions of the beekeepers. Later he wrote of one of the typical days in the plant. Quote, one Saturday afternoon in May 1878, a friend came who said he wanted to purchase some bee fixtures, but he insisted that I wait on him myself, for he wanted to have a talk with me. quite a number of new men had just been set to work, and the whole establishment needed all the supervision my poor brain could give it. One man was grooving top bars for the foundation, and his groove was not in the center nor near deep enough. Another had lost his gauge and was cutting up stuff without it. The dovetailing saws, for some unaccountable reason, were making the dovetails on the section so loose that the pieces would almost fall apart, and no one could account for the sudden freak. The printers were calling for copies. Clerks were waiting for me to examine the day's mail, which lay in the proper heaps all around my typewriter. And besides, the bell was just then ringing for our Saturday afternoon prayer meeting. To be sure, I was standing still, for I was wondering how I could best bring order out of all this chaos, and my friend very naturally supposing I had nothing to do, commenced to ask about the price of foundation. Unfortunately, when I was worried if there was one thing I could not remember, it was the price of foundation, unquote. Well, that takes you back a little bit to at least 1878 and what it was like in the factory there where A.I. Root manufactured beekeeping equipment and printed his journals known as the Gleanings. What a fascinating individual. We'll continue to tell you more about A.I. Root. But some of you still may have some equipment that actually has the A.I. Root Company, manufacturer serial number on it. I've got an extractor that has it's an A.I. Root extractor that was made there in Ohio. And we owe a lot to people like A.I. Root who spent their lives trying to improve beekeeping. And we stand on the shoulders of these great men and women who taught us so much through all the experiences, the hardships that they went through that we don't have to go through. So that's a look back in history. We want to thank you for tuning in today to Studio B Live, brought to you by Long Lane Honeybee Farms. You can find us on the web at honeybeesonline.com. Honeybeesonline.com. We'd love for you to stop by, take a look at our website. We have some great information on our website, especially our very popular and well-known beekeeping lessons are free, and so many people enjoy these. We're up to lesson number 43, and you'll learn everything you need to know about keeping bees. If you're brand new to the idea, you don't know a thing about how to keep bees, just sit back, log on to our website, go to our beekeeping lessons. Start with lesson one, and by the time you get caught up to lesson 43, wow, you will be ready to be a beekeeper. And if you're a polished beekeeper, and I know we have some listening that have been keeping bees forever, it seems like, you can still learn, and you know you can, and you know you do. Every day it seems like you learn something new about beekeeping. So we invite you to take a look at our lessons again, refresh that memory, maybe learn something new about beekeeping that can benefit you and, of course, benefit the bees as well. Oh, my, we really need our honeybees, and I want to encourage you to really take this seriously. We cannot afford to lose our honeybees. They pollinate one out of every three bites of food that we enjoy. And some crops will not be pollinated, and that means they won't bear any fruit if we lose our honeybees. And you've heard it on the media, you've heard it on the TV and the radio about the decline of honeybees. You've got to do something, friend. A lot of people are going green, and I tell you what, I can't think of a better way to go green than to get back to nature and restore, replenish our pollinators, the honeybees, by keeping bees in your backyard or in your couple of acres or at the farm. Come on, take the big plunge. We're here to help you. My wife and I want to make beekeeping a real joy for you. We will mentor you. You can email us. You can call us. We'll enjoy getting to know you no matter how far away you live. We do it every day with beekeepers around the country, mentoring them to be beekeepers and better beekeepers. So why not take the plunge? Give us a call today. Let us know that you're ready to start keeping bees in the spring. Our telephone number is 217-427-2678. and we'll help you get started. We manufacture all the beekeeping equipment that you'll need. We also sell packages of bees in the spring. We'll take care of it all. It's a turnkey operation when you deal with us. We'll get you totally set up, even with the protective gear, hat and veils or suits or gloves, whatever you need. We do it all. We even raise and sell our own queens. So we want to help you be a beekeeper. Hey, as I mentioned, I do want to take time to invite you to call us with your questions. Your questions on our answering line can benefit so many people. When you call and ask a question, and Sherry and I take a moment to answer it, we love to do that. Here's the telephone number. You'll be talking to an answering machine. Just leave your question, your name and your question, and we'll play it on an upcoming broadcast. Call this number, 217-427-2430. The number again, 217-427-2430. Hey, and why not call us with a question and try to stump the host with a question that we may not know the answer to? Give it a try. Maybe you've got a real simple question. Again, people are going to learn from hearing your question and our answer. So please give us a call. The number again, 217-427-2430. That's all of the time we have for today. We want to thank you for stopping in Studio B Live. Tune in tomorrow. We'll once again talk about beekeeping and get excited that we are getting closer and closer to spring, even though it's cold in many parts of the USA. We're looking forward to our next bee season. And remember, behave yourself.